Okay, good evening, everybody. So this is Shir number 5 in Hilchot Kiddushin V'Nisuin, and I want to finish off some loose ends from last week and then move on to start a new topic this week. So I want to start off by talking about something that Yisrael raised last week, which was the question of a double ring ceremony and where that fits in from a halachic perspective. Obviously, this is something that was unknown in previous generations, but in modern times has become something of a phenomena. There's not a lot written about it, but we have a little bit for reference, and we can talk about that. So I want to start with a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igrot Moshe, Even Ha'ezer Chelet Gimel Simon Yud Chet, where he addresses this this question, and he makes makes 3 points. His first point is that from a strict halachic perspective, it's not necessarily a problem. He says, "B'davar elu shachar shachatan kidesh b'tabat et hakala, natna gam hakala lehechatan tabat, va'amra hareini mekudeshet lach, o ata mekudashli." So she makes some declaration of kiddushin, and he makes the observation that that doesn't really affect anything in terms of the chatan has been mekadesh her, and that's been effective. She's now Mekudeshet. The fact that she subsequently says something else, which he describes as being Hevel Shtut, a whole load of nonsense, that doesn't undo what's already been done. And he says, even if we know from the outset, you know, that that's what's going to happen, and the Kala, you know, knows that's what's going to going to happen, nevertheless, the fact that the Chatan has been Mekadesha, that, you know, that's the end of the story. And whatever happens subsequently doesn't detract from that. So he thinks from a strict halachic perspective, that's going to be all right. He does have some subsequent tshuvot where he portrays the situation a little bit differently. And there it might be different in terms of, you know, here we've got a case where the chatan has given the ring and made the declaration, or made the declaration and given the ring. And then subsequently she gives a ring. If, however, it's both of them hold out rings at the same time, and, you know, each says, you know, you are betrothed to me with this ring, and he says that and she says that, and then they have an exchange of rings, that might be more problematic, and that might be invalid kiddushin. But he discusses that primarily in the context, actually, of a non-Orthodox ceremony. Here we're talking about Orthodox ceremonies, just where after the Maaseh Kiddushin, this has been followed up with this. And he says that from a halachic, a narrow halachic perspective, it's not problematic. But then he makes two further observations. His first is an observation that he thinks it could fall foul of uvchukotehem lo teilechu, the issue of chukat hagoy, that this is something which is being done to emulate non-Jewish practices, and he suggests that it's a load of nonsense, and when you emulate something that is part of a non-Jewish practice, then it says to me, if it's a load of nonsense, then it's a problem of chukat hagoy. That is somewhat debatable. Chukat Hagoy can sometimes be a, what they might call a movable feast, if I can borrow a Goyish term for Chukat Hagoy. Meaning, you know, a good example is, you know, the Chatam Sofer, you know, was dead against having a drasha in the vernacular. He felt that was Chukat Hagoy. A generation later, his Talmud, the Maharam Shik, who was perhaps more right-wing than the Chatam Sofer was, nevertheless, the Maharam Shik felt it was all right to give a drosha in the vernacular, and that it wasn't an issue of Chukat Hagoy. So, you know, to some degree, things which, you know, once upon a time are Chukat Hagoy, subsequently, you know, perhaps the motivations and the surrounding paraphernalia lose some of its sharpness. Second of all, it's not necessarily clear to me, and indeed to people greater than me who've observed this topic, this is necessarily an issue of Chukat HaGoy. Maybe it's just an issue of wanting equality, egalitarianism. Now, some people, you know, might dismiss that as being Chukat HaGoy in its own right, but I don't think one necessarily has to be so fundamentalist about it. And it might just be that, in terms of the Chatan is doing a Maase Kinyan and a Maase Kiddushin with the giving of the ring, the Kala perhaps wants to express her commitment to the Chatan in some sort of similar way. And especially in an environment where men wear a wedding ring, which Rav Moshe observes is not a problem, and Rav Yitzchak Yosef, in his tshuva in Sheilot Tshuvot Rishon Tzion, observes is not a problem, and Moriv Rabiha Rav Lichtenstein Zichrono Livracha observed is not a problem. So, you know, if the Chatan is already wearing going to be wearing a ring which shows the wedding bond of marriage between the couple, so if he gives his publicly, perhaps the Kala also wants to give hers publicly. So I think there's room to debate whether or not it's a concern of Chukat HaGoy, but Rav Moshe is concerned about it from that perspective, and he also makes the observation that meddling with the formalities of Kiddushin can lead to future, I think the word is bifurcation of the issues. Meaning that, you know, today, a couple that comes, and this tshuva was written, I think, in 1969, February 1969, this tshuva was written, so 50-odd years ago. But, you know, today a couple comes and says, yes, we understand that the Kiddushin is done with the Chatan giving a ring, and the Kala is giving a ring as a symbol of love and commitment, not as part of the Kiddushin. A generation down the line, it can be misunderstood. It's become de rigueur part of the marriage ceremony in certain circles, and people will assume that, yeah, this is part of the ceremony. Part of the ceremony is that the Chatan gives a ring, and then after the Chatan's given a ring, the Kala also gives a ring. And that's authentic Jewish Kiddushin, and that's not the case. So again, you know, Rav Moshe was very, just a moment, Rav Moshe was very much against it, but certainly on those points it can be debated. And Rav Yitzchak Yosef, as I say, has a tshuva in Sheilot Tshuvot HaRishon Tzion, Chelek Aleph, Eben HaEzer Simon Yud Chet, where he discusses the issue. He discusses the whole question of Kinyan and what's the nature of the Kinyan that the Chatan is making with the ring. But he bases himself very much on Rav Moshe Feinstein's meta-reservation, though he's not convinced by the problem of Chukat HaGoy, and he feels that, you know, if it's done in a more surreptitious manner, then it's less of a problem. And he says, you know, if you know, during the reading of the Ketubah, the Kala gives the ring to the Masada Kiddushin to give to the Chatan, you know, he doesn't think it's you know, without making a big song and dance about it, he doesn't think it's a big problem. But he's unhappy with formally tampering with the format of the Chuppah V'Kiddushin. There are, in some circles where, some Orthodox circles where the Kala gives the ring at the end of the ceremony. I know Rabbonim who, after the Chuppah is over, they announce the Chuppah ceremony is now concluded, and now the Kala wishes to give a ring to the Chatan. Traditionalists feel uncomfortable with that. whereas modernists feel more comfortable with that. Or I know in some shuls that it's done at the signing of the register. So again, you don't usually have weddings these days in the shuls. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago where we discussed this issue. Nowadays, very few weddings are in shuls, for better and for worse. But one of the advantages of having it in the shul is, you know, after the formal ceremony is concluded, then, you know, the minhag in Anglo-Jewry was you'd go up onto the bimah, and that's where you would sign the civil register. So it's very clear that the signing the civil register, you know, is not part and parcel of the religious ceremony. And I know some rabbonim who, you know, supervise the kallah giving a ring there. So it's very clear that it's, you know, the chuppah is over. This is the civil part of the ceremony. And the kallah wishes, you know, usually announced with the words, you know, the kallah wishes to give a ring. So it's not something which is halachically necessary, you know, it's a matter of her choice, etc. From a strict halachic perspective, it would seem that that's not problematic. I don't think Rav Moshe Feinstein would be enthusiastic about it. Whether he would seem it's got the same, think it's got the same degree of problems, I don't know. Yossi, you had a question. The main halachic concern is that if she's receiving the ring from him on the understanding that not that she, you know, this is an exchange of rings rather than an act of kinyan on his part, that's where the that's really where the confusion can arise. And so, you know, I think those rabbonim who are sympathetic to the notion that you know, sometimes a couple want to have the kala give a ring as well, you know, they try to make it very clear that that's, you know, it's not part of the kiddushin and it's separate from the kiddushin. And I think, you know, just sort of to add an observation here is that, you know, It's these issues are tricky issues in the modern world. It's not so straightforward in the sense that, you know, it's the days are over, perhaps a long time ago, when, you know, a Rav could simply say, you know, I'm not allowing this, and too bad. There's a very big open market nowadays. Lots of young people, certainly non-observant young people, are not necessarily members of a shul. They can go shopping for a rabbi under whose auspices to get married. And if they can't find an Orthodox rabbi who's happy to accommodate them, then they'll go quite happily to a non-Orthodox rabbi. So, you know, we've got to, you know, think carefully exactly, you know, where our boundaries are, what battles we're trying to, you know, to fight. And, you know, I'm just sort of flagging that up as, you know, as an issue. I've certainly had in my, you know, career one or two cases where people have approached me, you know, and asked me to do, you know, officiate at their wedding with them doing certain things, which, you know, have been halachically acceptable, but which I didn't feel comfortable with. And I was in the lucky position, I was able to say to them, listen, you know, I can't help you, but I know somebody who can help you. And I was able to point them towards, you know, a rabbi who was, you know, more sympathetic to their needs, or more comfortable with their needs. So, you know, we've got to sometimes look, I think, at what the wider picture is. And the wider picture is sometimes, of course, that we don't want to have halachic uncertainty or halachic grey areas, you know, and we want to avoid that. And, you know, we do want to be careful about letting things creep in which are not appropriate. But, you know, these things do need to be, you know, considered carefully with, you know, with Kovod Rosh, looking sometimes at a wider picture. And sometimes some of the statements made from certain quarters, you know, are looking at it from a particular vantage point, sometimes without close involvement in the circles where these things are regarded as being important. I don't think it's necessarily true or accurate to always dismiss these requests as simply reform tendencies or the like. One has to sometimes, contextualize things. We live in a very different world, to what it was, even 25 years ago. Rav Osher Weiss has the tshuva. Just a moment. Rav Osher Weiss has the tshuva where he touches on this issue. He's talking about it more in the context of a non-Orthodox wedding, but perhaps it could be relevant on if one's not careful on the edges of Orthodoxy. He says that essentially, one of his concerns about a non-Orthodox wedding is that even if the Eidim are kosher, etc., if there's it could be a conservative wedding where you've got perhaps Orthodox Eidim, the couple have got Orthodox friends who are happy to be the Eidim, but there's an exchange of rings, and he says there it could be very problematic, because there the assumption is the couple have chosen to have a conservative format of a wedding, which is where both parties give a ring. And that can interfere with the underlying premises of the Kiddushin. So I don't think he would invalidate it in the context of an Orthodox wedding where the Kalah gives the ring at the end of the ceremony. But it would be more problematic, certainly if it was given as an exchange of rings, which might be indicating that the standard Orthodox format of Ha'ishma Kadesh is not being followed. Somebody else had a question. Sorry, lost you there.
You have examples of those areas where you did find uncomfortable, even though they were necessarily halakhically problematic.
Okay, a very simple example. Is an issue which is. Again, there's nothing being written on this as far as I'm aware. A question of a woman reading the ketubah. This is one of the things that certainly happens in some Orthodox weddings in Israel, some Orthodox weddings in the States. I don't know if it's happening yet in this country. From a halakhic perspective, it's clearly not a problem at all. The reading of the ketubah we touched on, I think last week, is there to provide a hefsek between the erusin and the nisuin. It's also to check the shtar that there's no mistakes in it. But it doesn't, a wedding is 100% kosher if you didn't read the ketubah. And if you, instead of reading the ketubah, you read a poem by whoever, a sonnet by William Shakespeare, that would also be a kosher wedding. Is it what we want to do? Read a sonnet by Shakespeare? I don't think so. On the other hand, the drosha from the Rav who's ever giving the drosha sometimes, is at that point of the wedding as well. And, maybe he's going to quote from Shakespeare in his drosha. From a halakhic perspective, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a woman reading the ketubah. Whether that's what somebody wants to do or not is a separate question. And just in terms of hadracha and practical rabbinics, a reality of the world is, and we're not always comfortable with this reality, but it is a reality, is that sometimes what you do will box you into a particular position and label you in a certain way, and that has all sorts of ramifications, and one needs to stand up for things that one believes are important, and forego things that one thinks are less important. So that would be, you know, that would be an example of something which has come up. I had, not so long ago, I had a wedding where that came up. I said, I personally don't feel comfortable with a woman reading the Ketubah. I said to the couple, if, you know, if that's what you want, I can't help you. There are other people who can help you. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just saying that's, it wasn't, it's also, there's a difference, of course, when it's members of your shul. There's differences, lekula lechumra, as it were. If it's members of your shul, then you've got a contractual obligation to be masadik kiddushin for them. On the other hand, of course, if they're members of your shul, then, you know, this is the way it's done in your shul, and, you know, the rabbi calls the shots, and not the people getting married. But in that case, you know, I didn't have to be masadik kiddushin. And the couple actually came back to me, and they were, they wanted me to be Masada Kiddushin, and they were happy with doing it my way. Maisa Rav with Morenu Harav Harav Amital Zichron Olivracha. He tells the story that a couple came to him, Boger of the Yeshiva, and they wanted all sorts of different things in their wedding ceremony. They'd been through the sugyas, and they'd learnt it, and they'd asked various shilas, and they wanted to be done like this, and they wanted to be done like that, and they came, they wanted Rav Amital to be Masadeh Kiddushin, and they came to him and went through everything, and he said, listen, you know, I'm not saying it's right, or I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying I'm not going to do it. So they said, but Harav, you know, it's all halachic, it's all, there's no shaila about it, it's all halachic, why won't you do it? So he said to them, takshivu, atem yesh lachem et hamishagasim shelachem, v'ani yesh li et hamishagasim sheli. It's mean, you know, you want to do strange things, I'm not telling you not to do them, I want to do strange things, you're not telling me not to do them. You know, it's an, I don't have to do things the way you want me to do them. So, that's just sort of some practical observations about it. So, in summary, you know, from a halachic perspective, to do it after the ceremony or as a conclusion to the ceremony wouldn't seem to be a problem. Whether it's recommended practice, Rav Moshe is concerned about the notion of chukat ha-goy. Rav Yitzchak Yosef dismisses that. So, you know, every, you know, also with these things, you know, you've got to look around at Minhag HaMakom, what's being done. And, you know, again, as advice to new and aspiring Rabbonim is not necessarily, you know, kedai at the beginning of a rabbinic career to go out on a limb about things. You know, plenty of time in the future to do that, and it's harder to go back on those things, you know, than it isn't. Okay, I'd come with that. At the end of the chuppah, we have the yichud. After the chuppah is concluded, we go to the yichud. So this is the next point that I want to discuss. And we've seen the Rambam previously, but let's revisit the Rambam. Those of you who can pull it up, we're looking at the Rambam in Hilchot Ishut, Peret Yud, Halacha Aleph. So the Rambam says as follows. We read this last week and perhaps the year before as well. Harusa sura lebala medivrei sofrim kol zman shehi beit aviha, v'abala harusato beit chamiv makin oto makat mardut. Va'afirim kitsha b'viha asor lo lavo alea b'viha shniya b'veit aviha ad she'avi ota l'toch beito v'ityached ima v'yafrishen alo. So to create the nisuin, you have to have yichud. You have to be mityached ima. V'yichud zeho hanikra k'nisa l'chupa v'hu hanikra nisuin b'chol makom. So k'nisa l'chupa is being mityached with the kala. That's what the Rambam says in Peret Yud of Hilchot Ishut. So it would seem, according to the Rambam, certainly, that that's exactly what's happening at the end of the chuppah ceremony. That's the chuppah. The chuppah itself, according to the Rambam, is an irrelevancy. The Rambam doesn't have our type of chuppah. I mean, you might think that it's a nice thing for the couple to stand under, and if it's decorated nicely with flowers and has Baruch Haba around the sides and etc. etc., then it's a sweet and romantic thing. But it's got no halachic tokef. As far as he's concerned, I suppose it's a bit like the colour giving a ring whilst they're signing the registers. That's the and it's the yichud which is koner and gives the chatan the responsibilities of all the financial responsibilities and liabilities that he has. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Nun Hay, Sif Aleph, says the same, quotes the Rambam, says exactly, V'yichud hu zeh hu anikra kenisa l'chupa, v'hu anikra nisuim b'chol makom, and he says, and then we've got the Rama, again, that we saw a couple of weeks ago. So our chupa is the canopy. So the Rama is telling us essentially we have Ashkenazim, we have two sorts of chupa. We have the chupa that we stand under, which of course Sfardim do as well nowadays, but we have the chupa that they stand under, and then they go to Makom Tsanua, and they're mityached there. So it would certainly seem that everybody regards it as being necessary to have some sort of yichud, which is really the chuppah, which is really the nisuin, meaning that the couple isn't yet married until they've set up home together. And the form in which that setting up of home together takes is this point of discussion. We see from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that it's nigh on critical to have this yichud. Now the question is, and that makes the nisuin in terms of if chalila v'chas, either the chatan or the kala were to drop dead before they've gone into the cheder yichud, would they be married? It seems that they wouldn't be married. That would seem to be the conclusion, that they wouldn't be married, because we haven't had the chuppah, which is kona. Now, one of the big questions is, what format does this yichud have to take? And we have a variety of opinions. It's one of those interesting things that certainly, you know, if you go to a frum wedding, you know, they're very, very concerned about the yichud, and you know, the eidim will go into the cheder yichud and check the windows are closed and the curtains are drawn and there's nobody in the bathroom and etc. and that the chatan and kala can lock the door. And we will see there are poskim who advocate that. However, at the same time, there are poskim who clearly don't see that as being necessary. If we look at one of the earliest sources to discuss the nature of the yichud, if we look in the Maharil says, Minag shachar bracha she'ochlin chatan kala yachad beit savatar nagolet. So they have something to eat, an omelette and a chicken schnitzel. So the minhag kadmonim was that they would eat this small suuda by themselves in a in a room. And the reason for this is actually so that the couple gets acquainted with each other. Perhaps in a classical time, they didn't, you know, you read the Tshuvot of the late Rishon in the early Achronim. Now, sometimes, you know, a shidduch would be made between two families in different towns, and the Chatan and Kalah barely met each other before the wedding. They obviously have met, because you can't be Mekadesh unless you've met the Kalah, but they hardly know each other, so, you know, let them go on a date together. The only other person there with them is one of her relatives who serves them the food. And then, after they finish this meal, maybe that's the hors d'oeuvre, then everybody else comes in and joins them. So he says, Maharil says, nowadays we seem to have got rid of the yichud, and that's not good. But the yichud that the Maharil was comfortable with was that there was somebody else there. There was Yishachat Mikrovei HaMisharetet Lahem. They weren't just the two of them. There was somebody else to serve them. So it, you know, it was a romantic meal for three, as it were.
When was he writing?
The Maharil is a late Rishon. So the Maharil was probably 15th century, something like that. 15th century Germany. If I'm not mistaken, but you can, somebody can Google it and let us know. So that's the Maharil.
Born 1365.
Sorry?
And passed away 1427 in Worms.
1427. Okay, that's 15th century. Excellent. Shkoyach, thank you. So, let's look at the Bach. The Bach says as follows. This is in Simon, beginning of Simon Samach Aleph. Achei nikar chupahu shemityachadim b'makom tsanua v'ochlim sham. V'kumok shetav rabbeinu. V'haramba. V'lachei yesh limnoa milichnos l'sham rabin. Dim lo kein ein kan yichud v'lo makom tsanua. So the Bach says you need to make sure limnoa milichnos sham rabin. And certainly the way the Beit Shmuel understands this Bach is that milichnos l'sham rab, it means, you know, you can't have everybody coming through there, you know, but fine, one or two other people are in there, the registrar filling in the documents, the photographer and the masharetet, that's not rabbim, and it's still regarded as being acceptable. Sometimes you definitely have. I've been to I remember one venue where the cheder yichud was between the reception hall and the kitchen, so the waiters wanted to keep coming through with all the stuff you eat at the reception. So whether or not that would have been a strict halakhic problem, not clear to me that it would have been. I mean, maybe there would have been too many waiters coming through, but it certainly wasn't open to everybody. I don't think the couple really wanted a waiter coming through with a plate of latkes every minute and a half. It kind of ruined the atmosphere a bit, but whether or not it would have been a problem from a halakhic perspective, I'm not certain. In any event, let's look at the Beit Shmuel. The Beit Shmuel doesn't like what the Bach said. The Beit Shmuel says, towards the end, Mi umashe katav yesh limnoa lichnos sham rabim, mashma muatim yesh lichnos l'sham, v'ein tam l'davar ha-ba'inan yichud d'chazya l'biya. So the Beit Shmuel says, no, this is not correct. I don't agree with the Bach. Or for that matter, the Maharil. He doesn't mention the Maharil, but it doesn't agree with the Maharil either. Because, he says, you need Yichud Chazya Labia. In Ken Yishnot, Limnah Shalom Yichnos L'Sham Shum Adam, K'dei Sheyeh Yichud Gamor. So what we have essentially here is a machloket between the Achronim, which actually reflects a machloket Rishonim, as to whether or not this Yichud needs to be Yichud Haraui Labia. meaning a set of circumstances where it would be feasible for the couple to be intimate with each other. Now, this is essentially a machloket in the Rishonim, whether or not you can have chupat nida, because that's not chupa haru'uya lebiya. The Rambam is of the opinion that you can't. The Rosh is of the opinion that you can. And obviously other Rishonim who take sides on this as well, but essentially those are the two positions. And this is reflected here. So it could well be that certainly the Beit Shmuel is saying you need Yichud HaRa'uy Labia. Whether or not he holds that you can't have Chupat Nida is a discussion in the Achronim. And they discuss, you know, is it possible that you can hold, you know, that you need Yichud HaRa'uy Labia, even though you can still have Chupat Nida, or do the two necessarily come together? But in any event, what we seem to have here is this, you know, exactly this machloket. The machloket is, what type of yichud do you need? Do you need it to be yichud hara'uy labia, or does it just need to be that the chatan is bringing her into his home and displaying a sense of ba'alut over her, and living like chatan and kala, or husband and wife, ish v'ishto? And it's a machloket in the poskim. You look in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, "V'yishlim noach shelo yikanes l'sham shuma adam kedei sheyichud gamor v'zoi hachupa konav osa nisuin." Whereas if you look in the Mishnah Brura, this is a good supper quiz question. Where do you find the Mishnah Brura discusses Hilchot Yichud? So it's in Simon Shin Lamed Tet, which is talking about making a kinyan on Shabbat. You wouldn't expect to find this in Orach Chaim. But there the question is, as the Shulchan Aruch says, that with an almana, you have to have the Yichud prior to, it has to be Yichud HaRa'uy Labia, needs to take place before Knisat Shabbat, because you can't be Kona. It's mamish the Yichud HaRa'uy Labia, which is Kona with an Almana, and therefore you can't be Kona on Shabbat. So look at the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, "B'dada arba achronim katu da afilu b'vtula yesh li zayel achatchila sheit yachadu achar chupa b'erev Shabbat, mir bo'od yom, di yesh omrim chupa shelanu ma shema'amidim otan tachat taklon sot, lo mikre adayin chupa v'ikim u'kudeshet ba'alma." So reflecting what we saw there in the Ramah in Simon Nunhei. "V'im ken k'sheba le'a ba'layla b'ya rishona hu kona kinyan b'shabbat. V'achdi b'vtula sagi afilu b'yichud ba'alma mi ba'od yom, v'lo ba'inan davka yichud hara'uy labia, v'lachim afilu m'hayta nida, o shebne adam nichnasim v'yotzin sham ba'oto cheder, v'lo have yichud hara'uy labia, afal pichein have chupa gemura v'kona b'vtula kinyan gamo, l'mahave kinesua b'chol advarim." Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah says very clearly, it doesn't matter if one or two Shebnei Adam Nichnasim Yotzin Sham. You don't want it to be, obviously it has to be a sense of Yichud, so you can't have the Chatan and Kala sit in the, where the reception is taking place with 300 people pouncing on one of Mr. Reich's buffet tables. But that's more than, people coming in and out. But it can be, take them into the, the private lounge, and yes, okay, doesn't matter if the catering manager comes in and asks them, would they like the vegetarian spring rolls or the duck spring rolls? That's not going to be a problem. In terms of it needs to be makom tsanua doesn't necessarily need to be yichud gamor. So it's a machloket poskim. I think generally speaking, the minhag is to be strict about it. There's discussion in the Achronim whether or not you need to lock the door. Again, some people are very makpid to lock the door. Tshuva of the Minchat Yitzchak, who says that you don't need to do so. And certainly the Mishnah Berurah wouldn't think that you need to do so. But a couple of further points to flag up. First of all, it's worth seeing the lengthy tshuva of Rav Avadia Yosef in Yabia Omer Chelek Hay, Evan HaEzer Simon Chet, where he discusses the minhag of the Sfardim. Sfardim don't have yichud straight after the chuppah. Ashkenazim are very particular to have the yichud straight after the chuppah, and some people are indeed very strict. There shouldn't be any sort of hefsek between the chuppah and the yichud. Some people don't even like to sign the marriage registers between the two. But it seems that that's if it's not a chumrah, it's certainly it's certainly not muskam l'chol adeot. Rav Avadia discusses it or raises surprise that the Sfardim don't follow the Rambam and the Machaber, who indicate that it should actually take place straight after the chuppah. But he says the minhag of the Sfardim is that the yichud is after the simcha. Then when the chatan and kala go home, that's the yichud, and that's taking the kala into Latoch Beitor, and that's good enough. And his whole discussion is based on whether we hold that the Sheva Brachot are a Birkat HaMitzvah or a Birkat HaShvach. If they're Birkat HaMitzvah, so then the Sheva Brachot have to take place before the Chuppah, and they have to take place before the chuppah, whereas if they're Birkat HaShvach, they don't necessarily have to, even though the Rambam says that they do have to take place before. And again, we discussed that previously. That might be to do with the notion of Kala B'lo Bracha Asura Levala, that it's not because it's a Birkat HaMitzvah, but it's, again, it's Birkat HaShvach, but without those brachot, the chatan and kala can't be intimate. So therefore, if you hold that it's Birkat HaShvach, the chuppah, which is kona, the yichud, doesn't need to come immediately after those brachot. You have those brachot, and then you can have the chuppah sometime later. And Rav Avadia is very comfortable with that. What about being Yached Eidim for it? So he says the fact that everybody knows. He says firstly, some people see them going into the into the flat or the hotel or whatever it is, and even if they don't, everybody knows that that's where they're going, and that's good enough. And indeed, there is bichlal a discussion whether or not you need to have Eidim for the yichud at all. Again, it's one of those things that we tend to be very very makpid about. But it's not muskam l'chol adeot. So Rav Osher Weiss has a tshuva in Minchat Asha Chelek Gimel Simon Tzadik Vav, where he discusses, he's responding to somebody who was all in a tizzy. They'd been an aide at a wedding, and the second aide had disappeared after two moments, and he'd been left alone by himself as one aide for the yichud. And now he was all worried about, perhaps he should have run after the Masadik Kiddushin right away and discussed it with him, and, has he messed everything up, and do they need to get married again, etc., etc., etc. So it's a very useful tshuva to go through. But he says it's a machloket whether or not you need Eidim for the Nisuin. You need Eidim for the Kiddushin. That's quite clear. Because it's Davar Sheba Erva. But there's a question whether or not you need Eidim for the Nisuin, whether the Nisuin is regarded as Davar Sheba Erva. In terms of the Kiddushin is Davar Sheba Erva, because by being Mekadesh the Isha, the Chatan is prohibiting her on anybody else. The Nisuin is simply making her permitted to him. And that might not be regarded as Davar Sheba Erva. So that's the first thing that he discusses. that it's questionable whether or not you need to have the edim. He brings down a machloket poskim with some poskim saying that you don't need edim for the nisuim at all. So therefore, if this is the nisuim, then there's no reason why you shouldn't need edim. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a tshuva where he's choshesh that in actual fact you do, because this isn't only even if you hold that this isn't davar sheba erva, and therefore you wouldn't need edim, it's also got a financial implications as well, because the financial obligations of the ketubah won't come into effect unless there's been yichud, and therefore there's that monetary implication as well. And therefore, perhaps it does need edim. So that, again, it's a point of machloket haposkim. They're certainly very legitimate poskim, or very authoritative poskim, who say that it's not required. So again, normative practice is that you have edim. But if you're in one of these cases where you haven't got the edim, so it's not ma'akev. Especially, he quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, who says again that it's you don't necessarily need specific edim. Just having awareness of everybody who's around, that's going to be good enough. I'm just I think he quoted it somewhere. Da, da, da. Don't see it inside now. But certainly there are those who say that that you don't need the Aruch HaShulchan certainly says that you don't need specific edim, and the minhag is not to have specific edim. And people see them going in, and that's good enough. Again, I once had a wedding where there was nobody there who was from, and I needed a second aid. So the caterer actually was from, and so I was able to use him as the second aid. But he wasn't very keen on it, because he said, straight after the chuppah, you've got to supervise all the reception food coming out, and that's very high pressure. And he's got to be there for that. He's got to be. But okay, he made arrangements. But if it had happened that there'd been a crisis in the kitchen, and he turned around to me straight after the chuppah, I can't come to the cheder yichud. I've got to go into the kitchen. So lichara it would have been all right. B'shat hadchak. Is the second point that Rav Osher Weiss raises is how long do the edim need to be there? Now, there's two questions here. The first question is, how long do the couple need to be in Yichud? This is a machloket in the poskim. Minchat Yitzchak says that it needs to be 5 minutes. Rav Shlomo Zalman apparently said it needs to be 7 minutes. There are two shmort in the name of the Griz, the Brisker Rav. Some say that he was very, very machmir about the shir. And others say that he held no, that even 2 minutes is enough, or possibly even less than that. So it's conceivable, of course, that he held both of those things, that he held that, lemaisa, or lahalacha rather, 2 minutes, a very short yichud is enough, but he was machmir in practice to have a long yichud. Again, this will depend, in part on whether it needs to be chupa haru'ya labia. And therefore, there's the discussion with regard to a sotah, how long that period of time is. Kedei litzlot beitza kala, so that you can, it's the amount of time it takes to roast a small egg. So how long does that take? 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever it is. If we say that it needs to be chupah ru'ya labia, interestingly though, I think one could argue that if you say it doesn't need to be chupah ru'ya labia, one could argue that you actually need a longer period of time. Why do I say that? Because if it's not just chupa haru'ya lebiya, but it needs, it's a form of dira, as it were. So then one could say, you know, 5 minutes, you know, together in a room, that's not dira. You've got to, you eat a meal together. That's dira, you know. Half an hour, you sit down together. You know, how long does it take a couple, married couple to have breakfast together? I suppose it depends on how long you've been married. If I had all the time in the world, you know, I'd like to spend half an hour having breakfast with my wife every morning. Rarely get the opportunity. So, you know, maybe what one could argue that if it doesn't have to be chupa ru'ya bia, then there's no such thing as dira in less than half an hour. I'm just raising that as a possibility. I don't think, you know, the poskim worry about it, and I'm not saying that one should worry about it, but, you know, I'm raising it as a conceivable notion. Some are saying that if you hold it doesn't have to be chupa ru'ya bia, so long as it's yichud, then that's good enough. And especially if you say that, no, it's whatever is an isur yichud counts as yichud for these purposes, then isur yichud has a very small share of time. So here also could be a very small share of time. So those are sort of practical considerations. But in any event, so Rav Osher Weiss says that, you know, number one, you know, there are those who say it only needs to be a very short period of time. And number two, it's not clear that the Edim need to be there for the entire Yichud. In terms of, might just be good enough that, you know, so long as the Edim see that the Chatan and Kala go into the room and are mityached, then that's good enough. They've been witness to that. And then, provided they are mityached for long enough, then that's good enough. It's not that the Edim, there needs to be Edim for that whole period of time to give it tokef. The Edim need to see that they've been mityached, and then the Yichud needs to take place for the requisite period of time. So, for all sorts of reasons, Rav Osher Weiss wasn't terribly worried about that specific case. Yes, somebody had a question.
Yes, I want to ask about my question to the Edim. If there isn't a Edim, if the Edim didn't see them doing a Yichud, so what is the reason? What is the time that it's going to be Patur?
No, nobody says you're Patur. You mean the Sfardim? Is that what you're asking? No, even the Sfardim don't say that you're Patur. It's just, you do have the Yichud, but it's in a different format. It's not straight after the Chuppah, going into a room and eating a couple of biscuits or a latke and a goujon, but it's later in the evening after the suda's over, when the chatan and kala go to wherever they're going, then that's the yichud.
So we need the edim to see it, or it's enough that we know that they're going in.
So Rav Avadia says that essentially it's enough that you know that they're going in, because everybody knows why the kala is nichneset lachupa. That's the point.
Is that also in chupat nida? If we can say it, or it's only because in chupat nida they don't have the yichud on the first day.
Right, so
maybe here we need a edim.
Okay, so interesting question with chupat nida. So if you hold, if you're doing the chuppah, the yichud straight after the chuppah, then it's not going to be if chuppah nida. So you'll just make sure that it's not there's no issur yichud there. So, you know, you'll make sure that the door's open or somebody else is in there, whatever, and then you tick both boxes, as it were, in terms of you've got they haven't transgressed Issa Yichud on the one hand. On the other hand, they've been makayim the requirements of Yichud in terms of chuppah. Even though it's used the it's synonymous terms, even though it's we're calling it yichud in both ways, it's not the same type of yichud. One is an issa yichud of somebody else being there, and the other is just being in a makom tsanua. So what do you do? What would Rav Avadya say that you do in the case where it's a chupat nida? So I assume that he would say that they would need to have some sort of formal yichud in that case. They would need to have some sort of, if they're not going to be sleeping in the same room, they're not going to be, you know, having the normal form of yichud of dira together. So then I guess they would need a formal form of yichud before they go off somewhere, wherever they're going back to sleep. Yeah, where they're seen doing that. Okay, I think in actual fact this is a good place for us to leave it. It's a couple of minutes to 10, so we didn't move on to the next topic, which means next time we'll do it in its we'll do it completely, which or at least probably cover into two shiurim, which is the topic of the ketubah. And the different, firstly, the question of the content of the ketubah, etc., and then also the question of the mesirat ha-ketubah, writing the ketubah, lots of questions that come up with regard to the date and all those sorts of things. So, Bezrat Hashem, next time we'll cover all that. Adkan.